Welcome to It Is What It Is, a true crime podcast. I'm your host, Shawn Marie. How is everybody doing? I took a week off because I was a sad guy last week and I didn't want to do this, so I didn't. Bottom line. But now I'm better and everything's all good. And so we're going to do a fan pick from a friend at work named Kenny. He picked Chris Benoit. He was a WCW famous wrestler and he did a very shitty thing at the end of his 40-year-old life. So first we're going to talk a little bit about Chris and then his wife, because she also had a career in the wrestling world that in all of the podcasts, shows, and everything else, they really didn't hit on much of it until I listened to Jericho's podcast. He's also a famous wrestler, and he did an interview with Nancy, that's Chris Benoit's wife, her sister. And so that was a really mind opening anyway, on her career and what she went through. So, and first off, I just want to apologize. Yeah, I want to apologize because there seems to be some little homeless person riding a goat cart around the Walmart parking lot this morning. Usually we just have good old-fashioned affairs and fucking in the Walmart parking lot this early in the morning. But it looks like somebody has found themselves a little goat cart. So we're going to have to deal with that noise. Because it doesn't seem like he gives a fuck that homeless people sleep and live here too. And he's just waking up everybody. Any hooser. So, Chris Benoit. And it's actually Christopher, obviously. He is from Canada, and he was born on May 21st of 1967. And I already told you he was a professional wrestler. He had a 22-year career, which is really, really big, especially in that line of entertainment. That is a very long career because that is not an easy job to have. And everybody's like, oh, it's fake. It's so easy. It's not. The things that these men put their bodies through, even though it is fake, is still very, very, very extreme. And just a side note, was a very, very big wrestling fan. Like The Undertaker, I wanted to marry him when I was like 6. So, and Kane, and then I dated a guy that almost looked like almost exactly like John Cena, minus obviously all of the muscles and the hotness, but like face, it was there. That's like the only reason why I dated him too. Well, one of the only reasons. So I was like, you look like John Cena. Do the whole, you can't see me. Anywho, sorry, personal side notes. So yeah, he had a very long career, and when he started, he knew what he wanted to be at the age of 13. He never had any other job, any other type of profession, anything like that whatsoever. It was wrestling, and that was the only option and only choice for him. So he had a huge, huge, you really cannot talk about any form of WCW, WWF, WWE, anything like that without talking about Chris Benoit. Like, you really can't. He is one of the most talented, driven. He was very passionate about his wrestling career and how he came off to his fans and everything else. So he was very passionate about what he cared And I swear to God, I fucking hate people. You guys have no idea. Anywho, so he was a champion. The one of the matches I remember watching of his was one of his, he beat the Big Show and threw the Big Show over the, goddamn, yeah, you know, the net, the ring, there we go, and elimination match, thank you. So, it was one of those, and I remember it because of the Big Show. Like, everybody was like, oh, the Big Show is gonna win, and he didn't. So that tells you this man's strength. He picked up the Big Show, and that's not his name because he's small and little, and tossed him over some rings. Like, there's three of the wrestling thing. Tossed him over there. So he also won the 2004 Royal Rumble with Shawn Michaels. He made Triple H tap out, which is like unheard of. There's just so many things he did in his career that, like, him and Eddie Guerrero were best friends. And so, like, his whole wrestling career is amazing. And to hear that it started out when he was younger and in Canada, and like he would beg his parents to let him go and do the Canadian wrestling circuit there. And then eventually he went over to Japan. And when I heard about that and read about that, it kind of made me think of Bloodsport. If anybody's not aware, it's a Jean-Claude Van Damme's, one of his amazing movies, and he's hot as fuck. Anyway, so even now, as like a very elder man, he's still very bone worthy. So I just kept thinking of Bloodsport. I don't know if it was, if the the Japan wrestling circuit, fighting circuit is all that crazy, but that's just the movie that kept playing in my head whenever they were like, oh yeah, and he wanted to master his skill, and so he went to Japan to wrestle over there. I was like, ah, Bloodsport. So that's just where I went with it. Okay, I guess I haven't told you what he did. So he killed his wife and his son and then killed himself. And his son was, I believe, like 10 years old or something. He was a very little boy. His 7-year-old son, sorry. He was 7. I don't know why I have 10 written down there. Probably for something else. Anywho. And so he killed his wife and his son and then himself. And he did it over a weekend. It wasn't in one day. It was over the weekend. He was supposed to be going and doing his, he had a special pay-per-view appearance. He was supposed to be going and wrestling. I think it was like CM Punk or something, like someone like that. And it was in Texas. He was supposed to be in Texas. He didn't go to Texas. And he had texted his friends and called the wrestling coordinators and had said that his wife and his son had been sick with food poisoning and that he had to take care of them and everything else, and that he just needed a new plane ticket and he would make it in time for his appearance on TV. So they did. They rearranged everything for him and he didn't go. He wasn't there. He never made his appearance, which was unknown for him, especially when it comes to live events, pay-per-view events. He fought his way up to obviously the level he was at. So for him to just not go and to not be there was very shocking to everyone. And, Eddie Guerrero's nephew, Chavo, is also a wrestler. And him and Eddie were only 3 years apart. It's Eddie's nephew, but they were like brothers. So, like, I always thought they were brothers, but I guess it's his nephew. So, anyway. And they have, like, a huge, amazing, fabulous line of wrestlers in their family, the Guerreros. They have amazing. Anyway, so, sorry, won't go on little wrestling side tangents here. But Chavo said he talked to him that day and was like, something was off. Talked to him that Saturday and something was off, and he had told him, hey, I had a long night with Nancy. I'm sorry. I'm coming. You know, shit's being rearranged. I'm going to be there or whatever. And before hanging up the phone with him, he made it a point to say, I love you to Chavo. And it wasn't just like, oh, I love you, sport. Bye, bud. It was like a, hey, dude, I love you. Like, let there be no mistake in your mind that I love you. So Chavo gets off the phone and he's like, okay, that's kind of weird. I'm gonna call him back. So he calls him back and he gets him back on the phone and he's like, hey, dude, are you all right? And he's like, nah, dude, I'm good. Like I told you, it's just long. I'm trying to get all this done or whatever. And then Chavo's like, okay, cool. Well, when you get to Texas, message me. We'll meet up. We'll go and we'll have our do whatever the fuck it is they do. And so Chavo wakes up to some weird text messages from both Chris and Nancy's phone. And it was saying that the dogs were in like the garage or the pool house or something. The dogs were locked up somewhere else because he had some Rottweilers and that the back door was unlocked, and pretty much just telling him how to get into the home, letting him know. And he messaged somebody else too, not just Chavo, it was somebody else from his phone and Nancy's phone as well. So he sent cryptic, weird ass messages, which led to them, the wrestling organization, calling and having a health check, welfare check done on the Benoits. And so the neighbor is like, well, I can let you guys in there. That's not a problem. I got access or whatever have you. So the neighbor is the first one who goes in. And she discovers their 7-year-old son, Daniel, deceased in his bed. And Nancy also deceased. And in everything I've read, all the way up until the Jericho podcast, which I literally just finished, I'm going to say 45 minutes ago, they make it sound like Nancy's death was not as gruesome as it was. And like in the shows and stuff, they use the words heinous, but fucking everything is heinous in a TV show. Everything. You can die from very natural things on a TV show. And they're like, it was heinous. So I never take that as like, oh, it was bad. And every time anybody talked about it, they said that it was manual strangulation on both of them, and that she had had a bruise in the middle of her back. And so it looked like that's how he might have like anchored himself, I guess. I don't know if anchored himself is the right word to use. But then you listen to the sister and she is like, no, dude, like he brutalized my sister. And she kept saying that he brutalized my sister, and I'm a sister. And so I wouldn't say my sister was brutalized if in fact she had not been severely brutalized. And she had been killed on Friday night in the morning at like midnight, 1 o'clock. So, I mean, it could have been Saturday. And the son was killed early Saturday morning-ish. And then he took his own life Sunday evening-ish. So he was in that house with them for 2 days, at least 2 full days with Nancy, unsure, with his son. And I don't know, when everybody first found out, no one knew it was a murder-suicide. And so the WWE and everybody else like that, they did like special programming, and they did everything they do when any other wrestler dies. You get all the other wrestlers, they come on, they say how great he was, all that shit, and go on. So they did all of that. And then within 24 hours, Vince McMahon, if
obviously, if you don't know who I'm talking about, he is the god of the WWE, WWF, all that shit. He is the man of the mans, the McMahons. And he goes on 22 hours later, maybe 24 hours later. And they had originally planned to cancel that show. I think it was WCW. I'm not sure. But anyway, they were going to cancel that show and do a tribute. And then they found out that it was a murder-suicide. And then Vince McMahon came out and was like, so after learning some shit, we are going to throw away every achievement Chris Benoit has ever done. We are never going to mention the Benoit name after this. And we are just going to scrape him underneath the rug and act like it never happened. And when the police went into his home, they found steroids. And so everybody, that was everybody's thing, is that he went on a roid rage and fucking killed his family. And it's hard to say, you can't say that. It's not hard to say it. You can't say that. You cannot say that that rage is what made him do it. Because when you're doing steroids and all of that, that's an instant rage. That's then and there. And he did this murder and suicide and all that over a 3-day period. So you don't stay, at least never in American history do we know of, you don't stay in a manic, frantic state like that for 3 days. And everybody says, especially the sister said, that when he wasn't in like a state of panic or freaking out. And keep in mind, like I told you, he already had talked to the wrestling people and was like, hey, I'm sorry, I just missed my flight. Shit at home's hectic. His wife was dead already. His son might have well have been too, depending on the time of the phone calls. But so it's like he was slipping in and out of what was going on. Because like, to call and be like, no, give me the plane. Is in his head, is he thinking, and this is all just me guessing, like, is he thinking in his head, like, if I leave and I go to my wrestling thing, they're not going to know I did it. And then again, he circles back and he's like, well, if I'm not here, they're not here, you know, got to punish myself, I don't know. No one knows. And that's just the thing, is nobody knows. It's all up to speculation. Everything up until that Sunday when he kills himself, no one really knows. He was writing a journal to Eddie Guerrero, and he was writing down in there all the way up until months before this actually happened. He was writing down, and it wasn't like deep in depth, like, this is what's happening. It was more like, hey buddy, it's Tuesday, I've already had my eggs and my rice and my chicken, I lifted this, I did this, I practiced this, I have this match coming. So he was just talking with his friend, and the sister-in-law tells you that like there was a bunch of shit going on at this point in time. Like, they were losing wrestling friends left and right. They were dying and overdosing and drinking themselves to death and suicides. And so it wasn't just Eddie's death that affected him, even though everybody says that that was like the main death that he never got over. And which is so sad. And I don't know, you can't make sense of everything that happened that weekend, because even the sister-in-law doesn't even make sense of it really, because 6 months before, they were going to have another baby. Like, that was the plan. They were going to have another baby. Sister was going to move in and stop her life and come and care for everybody. And so who knows, honestly, what happened. But at one point in time, Nancy did try to leave him before, and she tried to leave him in, when was it? They were married in November of 2000, and she tried to leave in May of 2003, and then dropped it later on in August. And she had gotten a protection order, and the sister said it wasn't like he didn't blacken her eyes or anything like that, but he pushed her up against a kitchen island hard enough that, like, she had been in a relationship like that before, and so she was just trying to get herself, obviously, out of that situation. And then someone in the wrestling area helped get them back together with help from Nancy's sister. And so they reconciled and got back together. So, like, there was drug abuse, the sister says openly, does not deny that the fact that there was any. And so that, I would say my guess is that on June 22nd, an altercation between him and his wife happened. May it be a drunken fueled, anything. Because his friends did say that when he would start complaining about home and complaining about Nancy is when he would start to drink heavily. So I'm going to say that they fought about something. God knows. And shit happened. We don't know. He murdered her, obviously. The wife died first. And even the sister says she doesn't understand why he killed the son, unless the son may have seen something. And there was blood, from the sister's words, quote unquote, everywhere, all over the area in which Nancy had died. And so if there was blood all over and the son saw it, no one really knows. His son was drugged and put to sleep. So I don't know. And like him and Nancy, their marriage started on a very unhealthy note. She was married previously to another wrestler. She, like I said, had her own wrestling career. She had many nicknames, but she was going as in a persona as this girl named Woman. And she's arm candy, because Nancy was gorgeous, just gorgeous, a ring girl, whatever you want to call him. And her and Chris started this like fake affair, like they do on the TV shows, between her and Chris. And then it actually led into a real life affair. And so he and her husband had like this really brutal match that went from being a normal scripted match into something very, very fucking serious. And like, no, we're throwing blows for real. Like, it even from the ring, it went backstage and it was psychotic. Like, they went at each other. And so obviously that marriage for her ends, and she just immediately, right after, boom, we're married, we're having babies with Chris. So it wasn't, their relationship wasn't on like we dated for years and then we got married and we have children. And it wasn't like that. It was like, boom, 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 boom. Oh, fuck, now we're baby, marriage, boom, boom, boom. Like, so it, I don't know. To me, that's just too much going on all at once. And she was, after her wrestling career, she started managing other wrestlers. And even Chris's career, she was his manager. And some people say that maybe it was because he was 40 years old. And when you're that old in this industry, you start to dip her down. Even though everybody knows the Hulk and all that shit, and the Rock and Stone Cold, and they all come back and do those appearances, and they go in there and kick ass and whatever. Those motherfuckers are feeling that shit for a minute. They're not going in there like a spring chicken, bouncing around, walking out and being like, oh, I feel amazing. They're not. Believe me, I watched The Undertaker, my second husband. I watched his documentary. And he even says on there in his documentary, he's like, I want to make a comeback, but fucker's old, bro. Not those exact words, but. And in 40, even though I know personally people that get affected when you say that 40 is old, in this line of work, it's old. So everybody says maybe that had a thing to it too. I don't believe it was steroids. Yes, he was on steroids. Obviously, you don't become Chris Benoit, John Cena, or anything like that without steroids. And as much as everybody's going to be like, John Cena doesn't do steroids. Yes, he fucking does. Yes, he does. I even watched his CNN. He did a CNN interview that I watched for this where he was like, I can't say that I have, but you never fuck. I can't say that I haven't, but you can't prove I have. Guilty. Sorry, right there. Check. Guilty. So I don't know. I love wrestling related crimes, sports related crimes. I'm very big into them. So Nancy herself, like I said, had her own career, which is amazing. And she was 43 at the time of her passing. And she started out in 1984 for, she was Fallen Angel for the Florida Champion Wrestling from 84 to 89. And then she went to the WCW as a fangirl called Robin Green from 89 to 90. And then she went to the Extreme Championship Wrestling from 93 to 96 and then went back and returned to the WCW in 96 to 97. Her last appearance as Woman, and that's it, that is the name. There was no Woman of whatever, it is Woman. Her last appearance ever was, in, at least as a in the wrestling, as not just a wife, it was May 26, 1997. And she was never brought back on again. And then she was, at that time, she was already managing some other wrestlers. She was very deep rooted into the wrestling world. Her whole family was. And she started as like an insurance call girl. Like her first jobs in life. So she had other things before the wrestling. And then she came into the wrestling world, which is just, as a woman, it's awesome. Even though a lot of the stuff I read really irritated me. Because it was like, oh, she was just the eye candy. She had a couple matches. I mean, you can't just be the eye candy. Those bitches get fucked up too. She wasn't just like that. You know, she was down. Like she was so amazing. And she was gorgeous. There is literally not a photo of this woman that you're like, oh, gross. Like, no, she was gorgeous. Drop dead gorgeous. And obviously she was a arm candy for a reason. So Daniel was born on February 25th of 2000. So then they married in November. And I like these cases because it just, when he died, they got a hold of his parents and were like, hey, we would like to take your son's brain and examine it. And since nobody could understand what happened, why it happened, his parents were like, yeah, go ahead. And so they did. And when they examined his brain, they said that he had the mind of an 80-year-old man with Alzheimer's. Now, well, they found out he had CTE. And so that alone, take you back to Aaron Hernandez, The guy from the Bears, I can't remember his name. So it's like there's so many athletes that get CTE, but you don't know until you are dead. I don't know why I tried to baby step around that word, that you have it. Like you can, they can tell now when you have a concussion and they can help prevent the Swiss cheese happening in your head, but they can't. Oh, like, you know what I mean? Like they can't always determine that before you die, like Aaron Hernandez and Chris Benoit and many other athletes. Mike Webster was the first one, I believe. Believe it was Mike Webster or something like that. He was like one of the very first. It was a Pittsburgh Steelers person, I know that, but was one of the first people to ever get diagnosed with CTE. And it does, and like Vince McMahon tried when they came out and said that he did have the CTE and that he had the brain, not the mind, the brain of an 85-year-old Alzheimer's patient. Vince McMahon instantly went on his defense and was like, well, see, he couldn't have. That can't be true because he was still wrestling and he would go to the airport and know his way and he could travel and he knew who he was talking to. So he wasn't an 85-year-old man. And I really think that he was just defensive because this literally almost took out wrestling. It really almost did. When it came down to the way the wrestlers were cared for, the drug use within the wrestling community, there was no more hitting your opponent with a chair on the head. Chris Benoit's one of his famous moves is the flying headbutt, self-explanatory. And so all of those things, at the time, we don't know that they're going to have the long effect that they do. So, I mean, it really could have ended, not ended wrestling. I'm not going to put that on him as a whole, but it could have severely damaged it. And it took a lot of PR and hype and everything else. And it took big names like Jericho, John Cena, Triple H, a bunch of other people to come out, Stone Cold. I mean, a bunch of other people to come out and say, hey, this isn't roid rage or has nothing to do with steroids. That, yes, it could be because of the CTE, but that's nothing we could have done, stopped, or been a part of in his life alive. So it took a lot for the wrestling organization to come back from this whole thing. And even to this very day, I mean, you can find some Chris Benoit matches on their websites and stuff like that, but not many because they really have written him and his achievements and all of that out of the books. And unfortunately, people like Jericho, CM Punk, all these other people, their matches got taken out and taken off the record because of him. So, I mean, and Jericho even says in his podcast that there's his favorite matches he can't put on DVD. He can't release. He can't do anything like that all because of Chris. And so it's very damaging. And his wife's career is never really talked about except for how they started. Nobody really knew that that was his manager and she was the beholder of everything in their family life. And so, I don't know. I love sports crimes. I really do. I love the sports world. Except for like tennis and stuff like that. I can't get by. I don't know. I can play tennis, but I've never watched tennis. Yeah, no. That's like the one sport I think that I don't know anything about. I'm assuming swimming is natural up and down, you know, back and forth, times, whatnots. So that's like the only sport I don't really know. Baseball. Yep. Baseball. I don't know shit about baseball. Except for that it takes forever. Go to a Chuckers game. Fucking takes 5 hours. But anyway, that's all I know about baseball. So yeah, I love sports. Big sports fan. And there is really not a whole lot of shows TV wise that I can recommend you go watch. Because like I said, he has been X'd out of a lot of sports memorabilia type of stuff. But there is a CNN documentary called The Death Grip, The Inside Pro Wrestling. And that was on there. His dad talks about the notebook that he had for Eddie and like that type of stuff. But there's just a bunch of YouTube podcasts I was able to go and find about him and all of the news articles and stuff like that. But yeah, so there you go, Kenny. Hopefully that was educational for you. And yeah, you guys have a great week. And oh, someone asked why I changed the upload dates. And it is because I take my lunch during the week with my friend. It is the only adult time I have in my whole life. So don't hate me. But we have decided to take our lunches together. And she does not work with me on my Friday, which is Thursday night. And so I have to record on Thursday night and give it to you guys Friday morning. So that way I can still maintain my sanity while having my friend and you guys get the joys of listening to me banter. So everybody wins. Win-win. So yeah, that's why I changed it. Nothing crazy. And I don't know why everybody acts like it's like this big, huge 2 days. It's 2 days earlier than you used to get it. You know? I used to do it Sunday. Well, technically 3 days because it would be Monday morning. Don't, bitch. Just be happy. And then I also wanted to say this publicly. On my favorite podcast, they talked about me again, shockingly, right? Because I'm so amazing. And there's this guy named Blake. They secretly have gay love for him, but they make fun of him a lot and call him names. And they're very mean to him and pick on him. Well, he comes to my work and he does his job and then he leaves my work. And so we get to bullshit and discuss the podcast that we both love and adore and goes about our ways. Well, he comes to me because they had just gone on a whole month of not having any type of episodes. Like, what type of podcast is this? Anyway, so he comes to me and he goes, hey, this is all fake too, by the way. This is not exactly how it went down. But he comes to me and he goes, hey, when I was there on Friday, I said that you should probably come on and that you've probably deserved your chance. And Greg on this podcast, there's two gentlemen. One's name is Jeff and one's name is Greg. And I guess Greg was like, yeah, let's do it. And I guess Jeff is the one we're all going to have to sweet talk into this. He's my doubter, I guess. He claims he's not my doubter because I viciously, angrily was like, hey, you're rude. And he tells me that that is not how it happened. But I don't know, because Blake is now my best friend, because on this same episode, him and Greg could not say my fucking name right. It was like Shaw or Shay, or it was one of those two. And I only let my friends nickname me, and I only forgive the elderly for shortening it up to Shaw. because they're old. And then he told me that my name has too many syllables to remember, so I could fuck off, and that he at least said my name. So I was like, okay, yeah, sure. But he's now officially my best friend. So I'm going to have to use him as a way to get onto this damn show. Maybe. I haven't decided yet. My friend Andrea, who also is in cahoots with me and Blake, she says that Blake should just take us and make us go with him. But I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. You don't just force yourself onto people's stuff. But Jeff listens to this, and so he knows that that is now going to be a possibility. That I could just pop up with Blake and be like, hi, I'm here, so deal with it. Just kidding, that would never happen, because how creepy would that fucking be? But it's a possibility. And I just like telling you guys about that show, because truly, in this world of 2021, it is the only thing that brings me any type of joy. Hardly. It's one of the things I look forward to mainly out of my week. So, and now I have one of their shirts. I'm like the biggest fangirl. I am so happy. My husband hates them, but I love them. So, yeah, on that note, I'll be back in a week. And we are going to do a famous girl murder next week. So, yeah. You guys have a great weekend. Be safe. And that's it. Yep. Be great. Have a good weekend. Love you. Bye.